It's called The Tale of the Annoying Three.
This is the Extra Hot Gray Podcast, episode 361 for the week of June 28th, 2021. I am the emergency David T. Cole, and I'm here with Consolation Donut Sarah D. Bunting.
Is this a test?
Unconventional thinker Tara Ariano.
I apologize for nothing.
And self-contained unit and bucket enthusiast Leanne Jackson.
If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us for the very first time, she's a freelance writer whose byline you've seen in the LA Times, among many others, Leanne Jackson. Welcome.
Woo, welcome.
Hello.
Yay!
Thank you for having me.
We're thrilled to have you. And we are here this week to talk about the mysterious Benedict Society. Little description. The country is in the grip of a vague and ill-defined emergency. Or is it? When four extraordinarily gifted orphans are recruited to start attending an exclusive school, or are they? Their benefactor, Mr. Benedict, played by Tony Hale, tells them he doesn't actually think there is an emergency. He thinks one nefarious figure is effectuating mass hypnosis via false subliminal messages in TV and radio, and Mr. Benedict has assembled the kids to find and stop the mastermind. It's based on a book by Trent Lee Stewart. Leanne happens to live with someone who's read it, so we'll get those notes in a moment. And the show was created by Phil Hay and Matt Manfredi. The first two episodes dropped on Disney Plus on Friday. It'll be one a week every Friday from now on, I believe. And those are the only ones we've seen, so this should not be too spoily unless Leanne gets into book stuff. And even then, how do we know what may or may not make it from the book to the show? We don't. Let us do the Chen check-in. Just briefly say, Leanne, should our listeners watch this show?
Sure.
Okay. Sure. Sarah.
I have some caveats, but yes, on balance.
Dave.
I enjoyed it. I'm going to say yes.
I did too. I thought it was cute. It was not what I was expecting, but...
And not just because you were in it?
I was in it. And time-traveling 8-year-old me did appear as Constance Contraire.
It's uncanny. Very cute.
Leanne, as we mentioned up top, you have a teen, read the book, you watched the show together. What was your reader's review of the show in general and its fidelity to the book in particular?
There are three books and a prequel, so that's four total. I read alongside the first one with my kid. Whether or not it needed to be a TV show is debatable.
Mm.
And the reason why is the appeal of the books, that particular set of books, is it kind of speaks to the lonely sitting in their room reading a book on a otherwise fun Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of kid who likes to do puzzles.
Right.
Crossword, jigsaw, what have you. The ones who don't necessarily feel like they fit in with their friends. The nefarious evil that, you know, is discussed in the books is spread through TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
So those same bookworm kids are ostensibly not stuck in front of the TV watching TV shows. So then
right.
It becomes sort of a little bit of cognitive dissonance to have a show where TV is the bad guy, but it's a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
So those kids, the kids who love the books, kind of maybe smugly, and at least for my child, maybe smugly felt like they got the books better
mm-hmm.
than other non-bookish kids
mm-hmm.
who were otherwise watching Nickelodeon, et cetera, et cetera. So then my kid was just like, why did they make a TV show out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. Having read the books, I get it. I get mm-hmm. what they were going for with the books. The TV show, I guess it's just because Disney Plus needed new fare that mm-hmm. wasn't based on their same old Disney schlock. So my kid was saying before we sat down to actually watch it, like they were doubtful of whether or not Disney would quote unquote value the weirdness of the books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's another thing was that we both agreed that the best adjective for the books was earnest.
Yeah.
And the reason that is it came out or it got popular around the same times as The Secret series by Pseudonymous Bosch, which was sort of tongue-in-cheek satirical. And then the highly cynical, snarky, and just really downer Lemony Snicket books.
Mm-hmm.
So in contrast, this book was whimsical, earnest, and sort of sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And my kid was thinking that these days kids will generally lean towards cynical and snarky.
Right.
So was there even a place for a show that was sweet and sentimental and whimsical?
Mm-hmm. So did they feel it was worth continuing to watch? Are you going to keep watching it?
I am not going to keep watching it because I stopped watching TV shows with my kid at 8. Like,
right.
But you know what? They said for the sake of nostalgia and sentimentality, they would stick with it. And okay. I guess the depiction, you know, the book to TV show translation wasn't too off.
Right. So. Okay. Sarah, I thought of you often during the pilot, not just because the arcane trivia in the admissions test that the kids all take reminded me of our anguish in this just ended season of Learned League, but also because...
Yes, oh, East Remelia.
There is so much kid spy shit I know appealed to you in your youth. Talk about that. Did that get you? Or was that one of your caveats?
No, that wasn't one of my caveats. This show, having not read the books myself, I don't have that. I'm not carrying that into it. Knowing that TV is the bad guy, though, I kept thinking of my mom, who my TV viewing was severely limited, as regular listeners know. As a child, this is what happened. This is the outcome of, like, severely limiting screens, at least from back in the 80s. So that did feel like, barbaganda, I guess, that it was like, oh, no books, like use your imagination and it's okay to be an indoorsy kid. So I enjoyed that part of it. And there were also aspects of the test or the various tests where the clues are hidden inside the test. And it just reminded me of stories my mother used to tell about this college professor who would be like, please read all the instructions carefully. And then when you got to the end of the instructions, it was like, you didn't actually have to write the test. Mm-hmm. So if you wrote the whole essay, you were sorry.
Yep.
Yeah. So, but there's also this highly Wes Anderson feel to the production design. This is not a complaint for me, but it is definitely like riding an edge of cutesy. Like, it's not cutesy, I don't think, but cutesy is nigh. And there is a lot of speechifying that Benedict, Tony Hale's called on to do, which he does a good job of, about, you know, propaganda and thinking for yourselves. And after the last 16 to 18 months that we've all been through, it is really tempting to just sort of assign whatever political meanings you might want to that. And That can be maybe a little much, but the balance in the first two episodes is exactly right. That there is this earnestness that Leanne mentioned, but it's not two highlights. And there are characters that are like number two is just a delight. Your eye goes right to her, not just because she's always wearing these bright yellow suits that, like, I have to have all the clothing of everyone. Yeah. And the library, like, I loved it. But yeah, the balance is difficult to strike, and I think they're doing well with it so far, but we'll see. And so much rides on these, on the central four kids, and some of them are up to the task and some of them are still finding their way. It is not my practice to shit on child actors, but there's some bad line readings here that are not, you can tell yourself it's just stylized. It's not, they're not good. So I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to keep watching, but there are some things that could push it over for other people. And I totally get it.
Yeah. Well, since you brought it up, I did have a question about the kids because I do like Sarah, you know, I try to grade kid performances on a curve. Because they're children, but
yes,
I definitely did feel bad for the three who are not Marta Kessler, who plays Constance, because they're all fine and she's a star. Like, yeah. She outshines them so much. Leanne, what did you think of the kid performances?
The kid who plays Rainey, well, like Sarah said, you could argue that it's stylistic. He reads boring.
Mm-hmm.
The character reads boring. Yeah. He's mm-hmm. the least dynamic character there, and I think they describe him as thoughtful, so you get the sense in the books and in the TV shows that he's doing the least because he's paying the most attention to what's right. going on mm-hmm. around him.
Sure.
And the main criticism of my child, A, you mentioned number two, my child is a hardcore Kristen Schaal stan. And the outfits, I kind of didn't even realize, oh yeah, she dresses like a number two pencil. That's why all her clothes are yellow and her hair is red.
Thank you for putting that together for me now. Got it.
Yeah, it pays to watch with a kid sometimes. And the main criticism, both of our favorite characters were Kate Weatherall. I loved that because I was able to use it in my mothering. You're not packed prepared for camp properly. What would Kate Weatherall do? That became my mantra. What would Kate Weatherall do? Uh-huh. She always has sunscreen and this and that. But in the book, she's just a lot more determined and forthright. But in the show, she comes across as rude and sort of pissy. And I don't know why they made that choice. She was kind of like Meg from A Wrinkle in Time. Mm-hmm. Just pissy.
Yeah. It did seem like she was being directed to just yell all of her lines because that's how she sounded to me. If she got the direction, like, you're forthright, you're bold, and then that was how this child interpreted it, like, I get it.
I had the sense that she was supposed to be, like, Pippi Longstocking and Harriet the Spy sort of rolled up into one, but it didn't really come across because it just felt like her confidence was directed towards volume rather than aura.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this particular character is maybe being asked to carry a lot of different ambiguous signifiers about being a tomboy, about being non-neurotypical. I don't know if that's sort of the brief from the books, but I think that particular character was maybe loaded up too far for this actor.
Yeah. Dave, I'm surprised to hear you want to keep watching it.
I really did enjoy the set design. The Wes Anderson-ness of it didn't really click with me more than just sort of like a very stylized mid-century aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Like, but on both sides, like the Evil Island School, which is just a great concept. The Evil Island School also had like banger lecture halls and rooms and even their little dorm
room. The murals alone
was adorable. Yeah. So I enjoyed that part of it. Just like watching it, like literally just watching it.
Same.
I was a little unsure about the show when we were just following our lead kid, but then when it sort of like opened up and we got into like the puzzle room stuff with all of the kids there, and especially when Constant comes into the mix, I thought it was light and airy and just kind of fun. It was like, and the puzzles they are playing out was the exactly kind of stuff like I would love as a kid, you know, sort of like those same puzzles that you would get in those little mini puzzle books at the mall, you know. Some of them are like cryptic, some of them are just logic puzzles, stuff like that.
But it's also like Taskmaster, as I said, as I was watching it, like every time you're presented with something, it's like, okay, what's the loophole I'm supposed to find here?
It didn't stop moving, which I appreciate, it's also for kids, so it shouldn't stop moving.
Yeah.
But also I enjoyed it as an adult because it didn't stop moving. The only part of it that if I were there in control of it and it was my playground, I would take out Kristen Schaal and put in the character Joan Holloway from Mad Men as number two, because she's sort of like has the same office role, the steward of everything that's actually happening, the invisible hand behind the office's success. And I found Kristen Schaal's performance like a little too like goofy, although I did appreciate all her weapons were color coordinated with whatever she was wearing at the time. That was a nice little touch.
Also, she built an entire house in like an hour.
That
apparently
was pretty funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although I believe Joan could do that, too.
So, yeah. So usually when there's a lot of kids in the show, it takes me out of it. But there are four kids. And there's one really awesome kid, which is Constance. Mm-hmm. I find that they're bumping between them enough that I don't get like really frustrated with any one of them so far. The only worry I have is the further they go into the series, they're going to soften Constance, right? Because that's just the path you go.
Oh,
all right.
Leanne is shaking her head very vigorously.
That is the best head shake I've seen in a while.
Yes. All right, great. All right, good to know.
If you love her now, wait until you get to the end.
Great.
Okay.
All right.
Then you're going to name your kid after her. I just wanted to talk about the puzzles.
Yeah.
That was the best part of the first book. And I think they did a really nice job, and I guess it's easier because it's a TV show than a film. To me, I look at when it's done well, which is there, and when it's done poorly, which is the Sorting Hat in the Harry Potter books. When you read the books, that is such, like, the most awesome description of that process, of that rite of passage. And the movies are just like, this thing happened, next. The books of Benedict's Society, the way that they treat, well, I guess it's because the author wrote on the screenplay. So he made sure to keep the little nooks and crannies that he thought were essential in the show. And the fun translates. It definitely does. So
watching that part, that was where I could most see that it was from a book. Like, I could imagine how those came across in text form. And I it did seem like they were given pride of place as set pieces, those yeah. moments.
The thing about, you mentioned, David, about Wes Anderson. My child has only seen two Wes Anderson movies. And within, like, the first, really, honestly, the title sequence, my kid was like, this looks very Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes. And once you think it immediately, it's hard to stop thinking it because it's everything. It's the weird cars that you're not sure of the make of the model of the car.
They're like, when
are
we?
It's the old-timey, sort of obsolete. Right, the obsolete gadgetry, the clothing that just sort of blends eras.
Everything centered in the frame.
Lots of pastels and, earth tones and pastels on all the clothes. Tons of stripes on everything. Even the life vests, which I've never seen a striped life vest, but all wallpaper, et cetera.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
I could tell you why it didn't really click as Wes Anderson for me, because all the aesthetics and prop choices and car choices, it's basically watching a more colorful version of the British series The Hour, which is set sort of in this, it's set in the, early 60s?
I think it's the late 50s at first.
Late 50s. And the aesthetic is very similar. That metropolitan London minus all the gritty parts is sort of the aesthetic here. And I'm there for it because there's a lot of difference between Mad Men style and British style from the same era. Like, there's enough differences that it seems familiar yet foreign at the same time. But to me, it read as predominantly British aesthetic. So I wasn't really, I didn't really feel like it was super fantastical, but that it was just grounded in this sort of magicalized version of 60s London.
And yet, this is a lot of the same things we were saying about the production design of the TVA and Loki, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's like you have to find some way to get this world away from smartphones. Yeah. Otherwise, it can't sustain.
Right.
So then you have all of this buntnip mid-century, like, flecked enamel. And I could almost smell the foxing on the books and the orphanage. And, like, it's still a land where there's an orphanage. So I thought they did a good job making it, because I like Wes Anderson for the most part.
Same.
But I also understand why people find, like, the visual tweeness, like, that's an immediate barrier for some people.
Eight Splendors in your coffee sometimes.
Yeah.
It's good. I mean, others may disagree. I think we should follow the show's instruction and put together a crack team of smart orphans to stop QAnon, which is what this used to be about.
Agreed. To stop QAnon. Thank you for dotting that T.
It's time to go around the dial talking about something we've been watching on TV lately. Our first stop is with Tara.
Yeah, I don't have a low brow. It's just two highbrows this week. First, in treatment, the new season 4 has just ended. We moved to a new city, Los Angeles, and we got a new psychiatrist who is Brooke Taylor, played by Uzo Aduba. There is a relationship with Paul, played by Gabriel Byrne, who was in the first 3 seasons of the HBO In Treatment, but he, spoiler, does not appear in the show. He's like her supervisor, and she's known him since college, apparently. So that's the tie, I guess. But the way In Treatment works, if you don't remember from the many, many years ago that it was on, there's 4 episodes a week. Each is a half hour with a different patient, or 3 half hours with a patient, and then the fourth is like the shrink talking to their supervisor, usually. So our new patients this season are Anthony Ramos from In the Heights as Eladio. He's mostly on Zoom because he works as a home healthcare aide to an adult with cerebral palsy, still lives with his parents. And Eladio has also some mom stuff, and this hooks him in with Brooke in an interesting way that I won't spoil, but anyway. Then we have John Benjamin Hickey, the great John Benjamin Hickey, as Colin, who is seeing Brooke for court-ordered anger management treatment following incarceration on fraud charges related to his shady tech business. And then we get Quintessa Swindell as Layla. Charlaine Woodard has brought her, playing Rhonda, is her grandmother, and has brought her to therapy because Layla, as her grandmother puts it, has decided to be a lesbian. So that's not really how Brooke takes it. And then on the fourth day, we get Brooke with Rita, played by Liza Colon-Zayas. She is actually Brooke's sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is fraught because Brooke has started drinking again in concert with her reunion with an old boyfriend, Adam, played by Joel Kinnaman, who's actually good. No, he's good. He's, like, good and sexy. I'm confused, too. Anyway, Brooke started drinking because her father just died. So Paul drank for the first three seasons. He kind of haunts the proceedings as Brooke avoids him because she knows what he's going to say about her drinking and about getting back together with Adam, who also drinks. And things get more complicated with Eladio. We find out why after the first Rita episode, and we get a huge amount of exposure to Brooke's life and issues. And as such, the season is really valuable, not like just for the ways it challenges the trope of the black female therapist and her emotional labor in pop culture. There was a whole Slate post about this in 2018. And since it was written then, we've also added Niecy Nash and Never Have I Ever to this trend, I guess. The show is like the first three seasons, very handsome. The production design on Brooke's house in Baldwin Hills is like gorgeous, mouthwatering. As always, we stand a half hour drama as well. But it is also so stagey that I wonder now if it could not maybe be a scripted podcast, which sounds like a diss, but I watched the whole thing. I was never bored. I hope there'll be another season. But it is very much acting! Look how we are acting! Which gets a little annoying sometimes, especially in an episode where Brooke gives therapy to herself, which was like,
a low point
for me. But it was kind of fun to have a scripted show. Although after the first 4 weeks, I believe they dropped the whole rest of the season on HBO Max. So officially, the last episode aired Monday on HBO. You can watch the whole thing. I think you should. Leanne, you're nodding. Did you watch this also?
I watched the first three episodes. The fashion was really what?
Yes.
The fashion, and like you mentioned, her house. And also my favorite line was actually what the grandmother said was, she's decided to be lesbian, which my whole family cracked up laughing. There was no article. It's like, right. She's decided to be French.
Right.
It was pretty choice. Yeah. But the lesbian granddaughter had an amazing wardrobe. Amazing.
She gets nothing but gorgeous looks the whole season. So worth checking out. And then The Good Fight is back. Last season was only 7 episodes versus 10 or 13 in the previous episodes. We know why. So they compressed essentially 4 episodes worth of stuff into the premiere, and they just kept doing previously on. And then after every commercial break, it was like previously on date. And it would, you know, we were going through 2020 basically. And one of the gags of The Good Fight is how they like push. I feel like they're pushing as long as to see how far into an episode they can put the opening credits. And in this one, the opening credits are the end credits.
Amazing.
And instead Love of having it. Everything explode, it's just like, you know, the stack of legal books. And then there's like a kitten. Like, it's just very cute, I guess, because they thought no one needs to see things exploding right now. And true.
Yeah.
So we knew last year that Delroy Lindo, who plays Adrian, and Kush Jumbo, who plays Luca, were both going to be leaving the show. They are in this episode, but we find out how their characters are getting written out. And one of the things that I loved the most about The Good Wife was how, because it was set in Chicago, which is like such a corrupt Democrat town, it often let itself acknowledge Democrats are also scumbags. And then because The Good Fight started like right after Trump's inauguration, pretty much, like they've kind of backed off that. I hope they do more of like showing how shitty Democrats can be. In this first episode, I'd totally forgotten they were good. The Democrats in town were trying to like prep Adrian to be a candidate potentially. And Ruth, the Margot Martindale character, was telling him to like he needed to write a campaign book. And so his idea was, it's going to be 10 cases. I'm going to show what I learned from each of them. And she was like, that's great. But what if each of those cases you could show how, like, it showed how white people and black people can work together? And he's like, that's not what happened. She's like, yeah, but. So then in this episode, after George Floyd's murder, he comes to see her in her office, is like, I'm writing the book I want to write. And she's like, do you have to? And he's like, yes. So it's like more of that in season four, less Mike Bloomberg cameos, please. Or season five, sorry.
Oh.
But this show is the best when it's full bonkers. This premiere made me want to pick up with Evil, which I fell away from last year just to get more content from the Kings because they are lunatics. For my plug, I wrote for Primetimer an angry screed about why Fox needs to make like 20 more entries in the 911 franchise because I just feel there should not be a week when a 911 is not airing a new episode. Like, put them in new cities, add more episodes each season. I don't care what you do. This is too long for me to wait for more 911. So that link will be in the show notes.
Leanne, what have you been watching lately?
Before I get to the thing that I want to talk about, I'm going to talk about the shows that I understand why I watch. The one of them is Jaiva, which is a South African-based show on Netflix. And it appeals to me because, again, I'm a sucker for good outfit, good wardrobe, nice colors, nice hair. It is basically like if Honey or Girls Just Want to Have Fun became a serialized show in South Africa. There's an all-female dance crew, and it appeals to me because I have the heart of a dancer, but the body of somebody who just watches dancers on TikTok.
Same. Why am I not watching this show?
Same. Yeah, really.
So I get why I'm watching that. I also get why I turn on just anybody creating anything in a competitive nature. Mm-hmm. Jewelry design, pottery throwing, flower arranging, makeup applying, any of those competition shows, I'm in. Mm-hmm. And that's what I watch while I'm adding clothes on my e-tail sites to my, adding clothes to my shopping basket that I know I'm never going to buy. But, you know, you know, getting all those, all the fantasy fashion that I'm online shopping for. So those I get. The show that I don't understand why I'm watching is Flack. I'm halfway through the second season. And this is Anna Paquin, who plays an emotion-suppressing control freak, which, same. But her job is to help celebrities avoid scandal, from, like, secret pregnancies to gaffes to infidelity, drug addictions, etc. And the whole thing is that she is conflicted, and her life is scandal-ridden. So she's trying to fix these other people while she is just going down a spiral, and it's bad for her. Drug abuse, just random hookups. It's not great. So I usually stay away from shows like this. I can't handle stress. Anytime anything bad happens to someone, I just leave the room. So the flight attendant, for example, the first bad decision she made, I was like, nope, I'm out. And Dead to Me, same thing. I'm like, girl, what? No. And I can't. And I stop. My brain shuts down and I stop. What I do like about the show is the nonstop sniping. The acid tongues are great in the show. Like, if you were a fan of Veep the way that I was for just the nonstop barrage of insults, I'm super in there for that. If you love a bitchy broad and a stiletto stomping down the street with their handbag and the crook of their elbow.
Do I?
It gives you that. Short seasons, because it's British. I love that. But yeah, the way that I avoid any stress from any show, so for some reason, this show, it gets me and I watch it and I can't quite figure out why I don't relate or feel bad for Robin. Her self-destruction is meant to hit you in the feels, but it does not for me. And I don't enjoy it. I just feel numb. And the closest that I can think of what this show does for me is I've decided that it is my white wine mommy show.
Uh-huh.
In that we only have the one family TV, the main TV. It is a show that if my kid walks past, won't stop and sit down with me, which is great. So I don't have to have any interpersonal communication while it's on.
Uh-huh.
And it's also the type of show where I don't watch it with my husband. So if he's out playing video games and I want to watch a show, I don't have to feel bad that I didn't wait for him to come and watch it with me.
Totally.
Even the dog will leave the room.
Wow.
And go to the back house where my husband is playing video games. So the nearest that I can tell is that this show is just for me to, it's like my Calgon. I can just be taken away from everything else.
Yep.
This girl is destroying herself. I don't feel one way or the other about it. And it's fine, you know? So
I'm just picturing the dog like slinking out of the room like
backwards.
Really?
Yeah.
It's so funny.
It's very much, she looks at me like, I get this it. Again, really? Yeah. So.
Well, I hope the marketers for the TV show Flack were listening. It just makes me feel numb, and even the dog won't watch. So there's two for your poster.
It's not a bad show. It's just not a me show.
They've cracked the code, but you don't know what that code is. That's the problem here.
It's true. Yeah. It's a conundrum. Yeah.
So where can people find you online and elsewhere, Leanne?
Okay, I am in between bylines right now, so I don't have anything to promote. But since I started this talking about my kid and I'm the best mom ever, I will give a plug to my kid, who at age 16 just got their first job.
Yay!
I'm very proud. I'm very excited as a part-time shop help and gallery assistant at Leanna Lynn's Wonderland. So please go to their site. Patronize them so that my child can keep getting paychecks. It's for fans of Tokidoki blind boxes or, you know, Hello Kitty anything. Pretty much the super duper kawaii version of it loses value when it comes out of the box. That type of thing.
And if you're in LA, they have a physical store by the looks of it. Eagle Rock.
Yes. It's adorable. And it's teal, which is my favorite color.
Love
Please
it.
Go give them
there
all the
go.
Money. Thank you.
Wow. What a dream first job for a teenager.
Yeah, right?
As a parent, it's a dream because it's in walking distance, so I don't have to chauffeur my kid to
work. Yeah. There you go.
Boy, what a dream. And we'll link to your Twitter as well.
Top two jobs of my childhood I wanted. One, quarter giver at the arcade.
Yep.
Two, video store.
Yep. Wait, isn't the quarter giver a machine?
Well, when I was a kid, they didn't. When I start, oh God, I'm so old. They didn't have change machines at arcades when I was like really young. There was like, you go, there's a guy, he's got the coin dispenser on his belt. Yep. And he's chunk, 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 chunk. Yeah.
I remember that.
Serenity Bundy.
Speaking of things that are for old people, seventh and final season.
Oh, no.
Dropped last Friday, perfectly Bosch, right to the very end, including in jokes about The Wire by actors who were on The Wire. Old school actors like Reed Diamond of Homicide as one of the baddies, and Paul Calderon peacocking around as a major case detective again. There was an Abraham Ben Ruby sighting. Many, many sweet Lance Reddick fuming gif-fortunities. The last season was 8 episodes instead of 10, and for the spinoff going forward, I hope they keep it to that smaller order, because one of the show's pluses has always been the atmospherics, but you can get plenty of that in 8, whereas at 10 episodes, it's a little fillery, and they tend to fill with montages, which are scored with jazz, which is a feature for some and a bug for others, like me. The last season wrapped up some storylines. It set up the spinoff, not exactly smoothly, but like we all know what's happening, so who cares? It stayed self-contained. The show, I think, knows that it's like the grilled cheese and tomato of quote prestige shows. So it just kept doing what it does. It didn't go too hard at a capital P prestige 1 hour and 12 minute finale. It just did what it always did. Yes, Dave?
Oh, I was just wondering where in the spectrum grilled cheese with tomato is. Like, I understand grilled cheese is just like your go-to measure of competency of any diner you go to. But the tomato element, I'm just wondering about what that means to you.
You're saying it elevates it.
Yeah.
The next little level on top of a grilled cheese.
The difference between solid B, would not necessarily order again, will not leave a negative Yelp review, versus like a high, like strong B+. which I think is what Bosch is.
Adding a tomato is risky because of the gooey. If it's gooey, it could ruin the sandwich. Mm-hmm. So it's not just adding a tomato. It's knowing what to do with it once it's on the sandwich, a.k.a. Bosch.
It's when to add the tomato. And Bosch is smart about putting the tomato in at the last possible moment so that it actually stays kind of cool and remains coherent and you don't get the weird skin problem.
Okay. So on one side, we've got Fleck, even my dog won't watch. On the other side, we got Bosch, acceptable tomato handling.
Yes. Okay. Correct.
Great.
So, yeah. I mean, the other thing that Bosch, I wouldn't say it does this well because, like, it's a show about an LAPD detective. So there's only so much apologizing that it can do for itself before it ceases to exist. In the spinoff, he's either quit or been fired, or maybe it both happened at the same time, but he's going to be a PI. So that's a different and more traditional level of noir that does not obligate the show to try to put it like in the front row for us the way that police officers and forces can be shitty, because also like it's LAPD and like, you know, check. But it doesn't. It doesn't avert its eyes from that stuff and never has, but it's also, I think, been in a weird position in terms of like, who are we supposed to root for? And are we supposed to blame the shittiness of police on systems the way we would in The Wire? And I think it wanted us to do that so that it didn't have to, you know, stop existing as a property.
Right.
Now it doesn't have that problem. But I mean, it's still copaganda after a fashion, but it does know that about itself, I think. And you don't have to feel maybe as bad for enjoying Bosch and pulling for its characters as you might about other shows, which is damnation with faint praise. But here we are back at competent tomato handling, which sounds disgusting. Speaking of disgusting, here's a terrible segue into my plug. I do not sell the books the show is based on at my bookshop, Exhibit B Books. The B does not stand for Bosch, which seems maybe in retrospect like a little bit of a mistake. But anyway, let's just forge ahead with the store's original mandate, shall we? To wit, it's true crime, new and used. I encourage everyone to visit local secondhand bookstores on their vacations, but if you've already gotten home and you still need to restock, I've got Anne Rule by the Pound.
Yeah.
Edgar Winners, you name it, I will find it for you. ExhibitBBooks.com. And there is a sale just for you listeners. If you enter the code Exhibit 361 at checkout, you'll get 10% off.
Two items of business. One, we've been doing the CSI rewatch, which I believe I have mentioned here before. And I've become sort of obsessed very lately, the last couple of days, with the opening credits. And just to remind you, the opening credits to the early season CSIs are just little snippets of the first season early shows. And then they put some stock photography in there with crime seamy stuff like crime scene tape and a microscope. But there's one scene, I mean, there's one little snippet of a apple getting a bullet fired through it in kind of slow motion. And it's the one thing that does not go with anything else. Like, I was like, whoa, what did the apple do? Like, why is there an apple in the opening to CSI? Like, it's in the show. It had a purpose in the show, but everything else in the credits makes sense out of context for a show about crime scene investigation. And then there's this apple getting shot. Why is this apple getting shot? Anyways, what I'm saying is I'm in the midst of creating a theme for this apple on CSI. Because I need to tell a story.
It might have something to do with the varietal. Maybe one particular varietal is more criminal than others.
The lonesome death of Granny Smith. Who's responsible?
It would be Red Delicious. They deserve to die.
Yes.
Oh, no. Not this
yes.
again.
Correct. Correct assessment of Red Delicious. And then Star's the other right show here. Is Dairy Girls, which was a recent candidate inductee. I really, really liked the episode that we watched there a lot, which was the second episode of the series. So we went back and watched all episodes of both seasons. And
the Christmas special.
To borrow their phrase, it was a good crack.
Yeah, it's really funny. Yeah, and the Christmas special made me cry.
Some of the cast is on their own episode of a charity episode of Great British Bake Off, and they're just as charming in real life.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
The girl who plays Claire was also in the Christmas special of, or the New Year's special of Taskmaster, and she was very funny.
Howdy, Extra Hot Great. This is Craig.
And Courtney.
For our first submission, we chose one of our all-time favorite shows and one that is sorely underrepresented in the canon, King of the Hill.
This show has positive Texas representation in a world where there is so very little good in and around Texas. It has the highest continuity of any animated show ever. The best episodes of King of the Hill have interesting family conflicts rooted in sincere character development, and no episode better represents that than Season 3, Episode 14, The Wedding of Bobby Hill.
Boomhauer is going out of town, which is the perfect opportunity for Bobby, the most consistently entertaining character in all of TV, to learn some responsibility by trimming his bonsai tree and feeding the koi while he's gone.
We are treated to the greatest guest role ever. Oscar winner Matthew McConaughey as self-proclaimed genius Rad Thibodeaux. Every single word out of his mouth is gold. Somehow serving as both the clown and the straight man in every scene. Bobby and Luann are both instantly taken with Rad and his rock and roll lifestyle as a concert promoter. Unfortunately, Rad is not in the whole episode, but only serves to set up the true plot into motion, partly by being fully a trash person, as evidenced when he meets Hank for the first time in clip one.
Dad, I would like you to meet a new friend of mine and Luann's.
Hey there, partner. Name's Rad Thibodeaux. Pleased to meet you. Here you go, businessman to businessman.
Isn't that pronounced Thibodeau?
Well, you know, sometimes by mistake, but no damage done. Now, Luann has told me about you, so I know you're going to love these free CDs.
AOL?
Mm-hmm. And guess what? If you sign up right now, I get 10 free hours. All you got to do is tell them that SoRad@AOL.com sent you.
Rad throws a huge party in Boomhauer's empty house, ruining Bobby's chance at the $1 per day. He gets Bobby grounded, and it dashes Luann's latest chance at love since her last boyfriend blew up in a propane explosion. Bobby faces his harshest punishment in clip two.
Your father and I are replacing you as Boomhauer's house sitter, and we'll be keeping the $1 a day for ourselves.
That's right, and I'm taking away your suitcase of props.
Fine! I can do my comedy without props. So, you ever notice how... You can't take away my props!
Bobby and Luann, of course, blame each other, and this escalates into an epic prank war. After Luann does the unthinkable by tampering with Bobby's precious own fruit pie, he replaces her birth control pills with sweet tarts in possibly the least COVID-friendly way ever, but how could he have known? Luann then ups the ante and pretends to be pregnant, because that's how that works. Hank and Peggy, meanwhile, are having the best time watching Boomhauer's house, which is probably why they get swept up in the prank war and decide to stage a fake shotgun wedding. Hank gives Bobby some tough love in clip three.
So, how's it going there, sport?
Not so good.
Pretty big screw-up, huh?
I feel bad about it, Dad.
Well, heck, we all make mistakes. The point is, you can make up for them.
Really? How?
By doing the right thing, of course. You're going to have to marry Luann.
But I'm only 12 years old.
Well, just think, you could be married for 80 years.
Dad, you can't make me marry Luann.
Yes, I can, Bobby. You're only 12 years old.
The wedding happened, simultaneously fooling Luann and Bobby, giving the prank war victory to Peggy and Hank, before it is almost instantly ruined by Bill's insane jealousy yet again.
There is so much to love about this episode. The bachelor party at the Family Fun Center, from which Boomhauer is missing, reminding us all that this happens over the course of a single weekend. Bobby's melancholy goodbyes to Connie, Luann accidentally using an air horn instead of hairspray twice.
The wedding scene is really the only reason why this show is animated. It's so grounded in reality in its content, but reserves the right to dip a toe into crazy from time to time. Please say I do to the wedding of Bobby Hill.
Thank you so much, Craig and Courtney. Leanne, you chose this from our submissions. Please start us off. What did you think of the episode and of this argument?
Okay, I picked it because I lived in Austin for 8 years, and I, as a Black person, never strayed outside of the big cities in the state. You know, afraid of sundown towns and Klan strongholds, etc. To me, I watched this show, and it was like a safe, sanitized surrogate for other Texas cities that I just, you know, avoided. So it also feels a nostalgic spot for me because my college friends and I would watch it as we pre-gamed before going to concerts or parties or what have you. I definitely would love for an episode of the show to go into the canon. I don't know that it's particular this. I would have chosen A Beer Can Named Desire, which is another cousin-loving Bobby Hill getting too big for his britches episode. And it also gave us a quote that I use on a probably daily basis in the summer, which is Bobby Hill going full dandy in New Orleans and proclaiming, "This flower is a Wilton." One of the best lines in TV history. So, yes.
Thank you, Craig and Courtney, for mentioning that this episode or the show provides positive Texas representation, including the voice of our future governor, Matthew McConaughey, who is, as you note, so good. There is a lot to love about this show, and I fell off of it after a while, but I definitely still watch it at this point. Craig and Courtney did a great job of describing what happens there, but there's so many hilarious moments, and that the entire wedding hinges on Bobby, despite being 12, just not understanding how pregnancy happens. It's also, to me, very true of probably the kind of education he was getting in a Texas public school in the 90s. But also, just the family is so sweet. I mean, Hank and Peggy finding the camera in Boomhauer's bedroom and not knowing why it's there and just, like, clowning with it as if it's in a department store or something. Like, they just don't know. But honestly, just for my own fruit pie alone, I feel like this episode is canon worthy. And I believe it's our friend Pamela Ribbon, our co-host on Listen to Sassy, who that is, like, her Bobby Hill impersonation line that she can do the voice, but only on that. My own fruit pie. I loved watching this episode. It was really funny. My only knock on the show, and it's on the whole series, is that the animation looks like shit. There's really no way to sugarcoat it. It is bad. But the writing, no problem with the writing. And this episode, the escalation of it was very funny and great. So I enjoyed it. Sarah.
I used to watch King of the Hill. I feel like it was sandwiched into some like rerun, afternoon rerun package where it was like, it wasn't my favorite, but I still wound up watching all of it somehow, or the ones that were available. And so I'm fondly predisposed towards the show, but it didn't sink in really necessarily. And I certainly did not properly appreciate the late, great Brittany Murphy's extremely weird avant-garde pronunciations as Luann. Pregnant. Like, the word Buckley is different every time. There's a whole double country album sometimes in some of her line deliveries. But then she's also, I mean, she's like sort of a pitiable creature, especially in this episode, like with the hairspray, that she just does it again. And I was like, I would do that too. That I'd be like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's the Jersey girl in me that found that very relatable.
You ever send an email to yourself just as a reminder, and then you get the email note and you go to check your emails like, oh geez, I just sent to myself half a second ago. That is basically the hairspray. Yeah. Yep.
We are all Luann. isn't that pronounced Thibodeau? Matthew McConaughey's complete lack of vanity in this performance is perfect. I'm sure he was told to his face, you're playing yourself, and he still didn't care. He was like, that's fine. The line reading of, I know you want my attention and that's nothing I can't handle. It's just something I'm going to be saying to the pets for a long time.
Yeah.
The Casio, but I was mostly struck, like, overall in this episode, like, there were a lot of places where it could have gone, like, really dark and gross. and been really mean to the characters. And also, like, it is a 12-year-old getting married to his cousin. Like, that's a pretty high tightrope, I guess. I know it's animation, but... and it manages to just have a good ear for what is not too far. And one example of that is actually the amount of Casio and the quality of Casio at the wedding reception, which is like, it's only a couple of songs, but it's exactly like, it's perfect. It's exactly right. The disgusted placemats, that's it. That ends the episode, made me laugh. This was very enjoyable and made me, I don't know, sort of like grateful, I guess, to have been reminded that this was a good show and that there were performances in it that I think we might forget about now, all these years later. And the presentation, of course, was excellent. So thank you guys. And the tag team setup is a good one. I hope future submitters use that.
I am 100% convinced that Matthew McConaughey did all that in one take.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. No errors.
Yeah.
Just boob. Yep. Like, yeah, all right. And he's mm-hmm. like, he didn't even bring a script. He's like, he's got it. Not too much to add to what's already been said. King of the Hill for me was a show that always paled in comparison to the contemporary Simpsons of its time-ish. There's overlap between Shitty Simpsons starting and this show. Mm-hmm. But for me, like the fantastical world of the Simpsons was always a bigger draw. So this was never a show that was like a keen observer of. But watching this show now, I do appreciate it more, especially the more subtle character notes, like
yes.
The Hills in the bedroom playing news anchor to the sex camera. The only part of this argument I will say I feel like I would put a minor correction on or perhaps a qualifier is I do believe there's other cartoons with better continuity. Like, I don't like Rick and Morty, but that show is built on continuity. Futurama, I believe, I think does a good job with their continuity, even though it involves parallel universes and all that kind of stuff. I think this would perhaps fall into the best family-oriented cartoon continuity Emmy. Congratulations, yeah. King of the Hill.
But although Bob's Burgers does too.
That's true. Yeah. Boy, it's been a long time since I thought about AOL CDs, though.
Yes.
Oh, God.
They were a scourge for so, God, they so really long. Were. So long. Yuck. Speaking about yuck, to Luann's point, you do not realize how quickly after you leave Austin, Texas becomes scary Texas.
Yes.
Like 20 minutes to Elgin from here, and you're like, ugh, I want to go back home.
I'm actually planning a trip back, and, you know, maybe I think even when it's bad and I'm getting stung with fire ants and mosquitoes, I'll just close my eyes and think about Luann, and maybe it'll perk me up.
Buckley.
Well, thank you for the submission. That was great. Yeah, the tag team was fun, too. Let us put this to the official vote. Just one thing worth saying, Leanne, just based on something you said at the start of your argument, we can let more than one episode of a show into the canon.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
It doesn't have to necessarily be your absolute favorite. It just has to be worthy of being in the upper echelon. Of-
yeah, this one's entry would not exclude yeah. another one.
Got it. Yes,
so
got
with
it.
That in mind... The Wedding of Bobby Hill. Do you believe it should be in the canon or will you give this one a pass?
I think based on the fact that this is one of the few times we get to see the humorless Hank Hill actually enjoy himself a little bit, I'm going to go ahead and say yes.
Tara?
For me as well. And someone, by the way, since we're on the subject, someone should submit a beer can named Desire because that is also a super funny classic episode.
And yeah. Bill wins. Bill actually gets to win in that episode.
Yes. Yes, it's a yes for me.
And me too. All right, that means King of the Hill, Season 3, Episode 14, The Wedding of Bobby Hill. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
That's what I like about Texas.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
Oh, before we start... Leanne, do you recognize that clip I just played? That's what we like about Texas. Is that something
no.
burned into your brain from your time here? Oh, okay.
It must have been since then.
It's the Dairy Queen jingle for Texas.
No, the only thing I remember is the hottest, coolest time in Texas. Schlitterbahn, bahn, bahn.
Oh, yes.
Who is our winner of the week, Sarah D. Bunting?
True Crime Casting, some more.
Never stops.
Peacock's Joe Exotic. It really doesn't. The Staircase alone. Jesus Christ, I think I'm in that thing now. Anyway, Peacock's Joe Exotic has cast Dean Winters as Jeff Lowe. It took me a second, and then I was like, yeah, that's perfect. Joel Marsh Garland also was cast to play James Garrison, but that's probably better for him than it is for the show.
It's not bad for the show. He's just no Dean Winters. That's why I phrased it that way in the talk.
Yeah, exactly. and then we're all winners, I think, because Dustin Lance Black is putting together a fictionalized series adaptation of Under the Banner of Heaven, which is a book that I like tore through actually while you guys, Tara and Dave, were visiting me. But oh my gosh, that is a great one. I am interested to see what Andrew Garfield.
That's why you didn't go to dinner with us. Too busy reading your books.
Yeah. Yeah. My bookie books. Yeah. yeah. Anyway, I don't know about Andrew Garfield in this role, but
hates Mondays.
He's in it. And so is Daisy Edgar Jones. I'm sure he'll be fine, but he's not quite corn-fed looking enough,
And neither of them is American. Like, there aren't American actors. Cast Americans.
Yeah.
Damn.
Jesse Plemons is right there and can do this.
I will always remember that book for being the book that I was reading when our power was out for several days after the big blackout in the 2000s, whatever year that was. 04, 03.
Oh, okay. 2003.
Anywho, I have our loser. And it is Jared Padalecki. So what happened is Jensen Ackles and his wife, Danielle, I think, Mrs. Ack-ack. Jensen Ackles, they pitched a show to the CW that's going to be a prequel to Supernatural called The Winchesters. And I guess there was a tweet about it, and Jared Padalecki thought the way to respond was to quote tweet it and tell Jensen Ackles, congratulations, and I wish I had heard about this some other way than reading about it on Twitter. And then people who are fans of Supernatural were like, he's doing a bit. And he had to reply and be like, I am not doing a bit. This is absolutely the first I've heard of it. So they apparently patched it up after Jared Padalecki had to tell fans on Twitter, please stop sending hate and death threats to Jensen Ackles. But anyway, yes, Jensen Ackles should have let Jared Padalecki know, hey, we're pitching this thing. But it's not clear to me if it's a prequel series, if Jensen Ackles is even going to be in it necessarily. Like, if it's about the dad or something, like, who knows? But also, like, Jared Padalecki, did you lose Jensen Ackles' number? Like, just text him. Always think before you send a tweet. Is this a text or a tweet? This is a text. Text your man. Don't embarrass yourself and him by doing all this shit on Main.
Speaking about trying not to embarrass yourself, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
It's game time.
Game time.
It's a new season. This is the first game of the new season. Today we are playing once again, Is This Anything? From our good friend Dave from Chicago, who earns himself an extra credit topic. This is what we got in store for you. 12 disparate rounds of true or false questions about television. I'll read you the round. I'll read you some questions. You tell me true or false. You get your point or you don't. That's all there is to it.
Got it.
No steel meals, no equalizer zones. And if there's a tie at the end of the game, just because of the nature of the game, I'm going to give everybody who's up at the top of the leaderboard a victory this week.
Ah.
Wow.
All right. Let's throw it a picket. It's you be going first.
We will start with Sarah.
Sarah, Leanne, Tara is our order today. Are we ready to play once again? Is this anything?
Yes.
True.
I'm nervous.
Sarah D. Bunting, our first round is, was this a game featured on The Price is Right? Tip the Scale.
Yes.
Really?
Leanne, Push Your Luck.
No.
A point for Leanne. Tara, Bonkers.
Bonkers with a B?
Yep.
No.
Yes. Back to Sarah. Shower Game.
Oh.
Yeah. Was Shower Game a game on The Price is Right?
This is one of those like prisoner's dilemma sounds fake. Yes, I think it was.
You are correct. It was.
Nice.
Shower Game followed by Golden Road.
Oh,
that's
no.
For Leanne. Golden Road. Price is Right game. Yes or no?
I hope not.
No.
It was.
Oh, guys.
Tatara, low ball. Low ball.
Low ball. Yes.
No, it's not. Last question in round one for each of you. Sarah D. Bunting, Pathfinder. Pathfinder.
Pathfinder, yes.
Leanne, it's in the bag. It's in the bag.
I watched so much of this with my grandparents, but I don't even remember. But I'm going to say yes.
Correct.
Yay. They're smiling down on me from heaven.
Beg, borrow, or steal to take us out.
Oh, man. Yes.
Incorrect. And that is round one. Round two.
Okay.
Is this a real quote from a Wikipedia episode description for ABC's Once Upon a Time?
Excellent.
Oh, God.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes.
Yes or no? After they meet up with King Arthur in their quest in Camelot, the residents return to Storybrooke 6 weeks later with no memories of what happened in Camelot while wearing completely different attires.
False.
It was incorrect answer. Yikes. Leanne. Now, Rumpelstiltskin must now work for Hades. Otherwise, Hades will take his unborn child.
It just sounds like you were making mouth sounds. I'm just going to say yes.
You are correct.
Yay for mouth sounds.
During the first Ogre's War, Beowulf leads a fearsome charge on the battlefield in the Enchanted Forest of Old.
No.
That was.
It's not my game.
Back to Sarah. Cinderella faces a dilemma when Jacques and Gus Gus want to unionize the garment factory workers.
No.
Correct.
Just doesn't right. Fuck with unions.
Leanne, in the past in the Enchanted Forest, the Evil Queen offers to aid the revenge plot of Edmond Dantes, the Count of Monte Cristo. Not Crisco. The Count of Monte Cristo is a slippery fellow. Is that a real quote from a Wikipedia episode description of ABC's Once Upon a Time?
I'll say no.
It was. Wow. It was.
The Count of Monte Cristo?
Yeah. Tara.
Yep.
Mowgli and Tarzan loyalties are tested when the forest creatures want to declare war on humans.
Yes.
No.
Oh.
Sarah,
I'm
going to
start George Costanzaing this.
Mary is Jekyll's unrequited love. She and Hyde fall in love. Jekyll accidentally fatally defenestrates Mary. He frames Hyde.
I mean, who amongst us? I'll say yes.
You are correct. Yeah. I really wish we had video available to our users because Leanne's exasperated look after I read that one was priceless.
I'm like, what is this show?
Let's find out if you can get this one. When Hades arrives to help Xelena with her plan to steal the Scarecrow's brain, the two find romantic feelings for each other.
Is this every make-believe character ever in one TV show? Is that the whole point?
Yeah. Yes.
Fascinating. Yes.
Yes, of course. Of course it is.
Yeah.
We'll end round two with this question for Tara. Regina begins to grow tired of her loveless marriage and ends up attracting the attention of a rebellious green fairy named Tinkerbell.
No.
It was. It really is in your game. Wow. Let's see if you can prove with this. Round three. Did the Charlie's Angels go undercover as this?
Okay.
70s series only.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting. Taxi driver, taxi dispatcher, and roller waitress.
Yes.
Correct. Leanne. Zookeeper, intern, and cotton candy vendor.
I only know the one with the Beyonce song, so I just don't even really know what you're talking about, but I'm going to say yes. Yes, sure.
No, that is made up. Tara, nuns. All three is nuns.
Yes.
Incorrect. Sarah D. Bunting, ice-capade performers.
No.
In two episodes, in fact, they were ice-capade performers.
Sorry.
Leanne, bodyguards for Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, dear.
Did the Charlie's Angels go undercover as
Leanne
bodyguards?
Leanne is in visible pain right now.
For Sammy Davis Jr.
No. No. I wasn't even born when the show came out. I don't even know.
We just got a guess based on 70s stuff, I think. Don't listen to me, though, and my 0 points.
Tara.
Yep.
Santa's elves at a Sears and a gift wrapper.
I want to say yes, so I'm going to say no.
The Costanza method.
I cracked
it. Welcome.
Sarah D. Bunting. Truckers. Truckers.
I feel like I've actually seen this episode. God help me. So I'm going to say yes.
Indeed. That was season 4, episode 3, as you may recall.
I no.
All right, Leanne, no, last of your Charlie Angels question. A disco dance instructor, a socially inept heiress, and a replacement photographer.
That sounds like a strong candidate for yes.
It was. Yes. First season episode.
Yay.
Tara.
Yep.
Lady football players. Lady football players.
Once again, I want to say no, so I'm going to say yes.
You are correct.
I've cracked it.
This is round 4. Is this a Real Housewives opening credit catchphrase?
Great.
Oh, Christ. Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Jersey. Take me home.
I'm not bragging. I'm just blessed.
Yes.
It is not.
Wow.
Should be.
Yeah.
Leanne, throw me to the wolves and I shall return leading the pack.
That sounds like the Mormon one. Yes.
That was Lisa from Beverly Hills.
Amazing.
Season 5.
Oh, oops.
Tart.
Yep.
I can deal with a lot, but I can't deal with stupid.
Yes.
Leah, Miami Season 2.
Oh, Miami.
Sarah. I don't want to get old. That's it. I don't want to get old.
That's a tough one because they're not usually that short. But, I mean, look at all the surgery. Okay, I want to say no, and now I want to say yes. So I'm going to say no.
Vicky, OC, Season 1.
Good grief.
That bitch.
Leanne, in my world, money doesn't talk. It swears.
No.
Yes. Carlton, Beverly Hills, Season 4.
Huh.
Tara.
Yeah.
It's my way till payday.
No. That's Queen of Jordan.
That's Queen of Jordan from 30 Rock. Correct. Sarah D. Bunting. I don't keep up with the Joneses. I am the Joneses.
I hate this game. Yes.
You are correct. That was Nene, or is it Nene?
Nene.
Nene.
Nene, unless you're a bird in Hawaii, in which case you're Nene. Atlanta, 1 and 2. Leanne, I may not work, but you have to earn my respect.
I wish I had gotten Sarah's. Atlanta's the only one I've ever watched. Sure, yeah.
It is not. And lastly for Tara, I start the party, I end the party, I am the party.
No.
Correct. It is not. Tara has found the system that is working in her favor. Round 5. Is this a Schoolhouse Rock song?
Oh, boy.
Sarah D. Bunting, Little 12 Toes.
No.
Yes. Leanne, Lucky 13.
No.
Correct. Tara, No More Kings.
Yes.
Yes. Famous one. Sarah D. Bunting. Michael recycles.
Fuck off. I'll tell you what Michael can do. Michael recycles. Yes.
No, too early for recycling. I'm going to guess.
Fucking Michael.
Leanne, the homonym game. The homonym game.
No. Nope.
Correct.
Nice.
Tara. Interplanet Janet.
Yes.
Sarah D. Bunting, can you conjugate?
Yes.
You can, I mean, that is incorrect answer. Leanne, Rufus Xavier Sarsaparilla.
That's from something. So, yes?
Yep. Guess what? It was from Schoolhouse Rock. And the last question of round five for Tara. Sufferin' till suffrage.
Yes.
Yes, that was.
Well, I've actually heard of all three of mine.
All right. This is round six. Did this brand / product sponsor a design challenge on Project Runway?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I got this.
The TV show Lipstick Jungle.
Yes.
Season 5. Mm-hmm. Leanne, Campbell's Soup.
No, that was Top Chef. Say no.
They did. Season 7.
Oh, I guess I don't got this.
Tara. Crystal Light.
No.
Correct. Sarah D. Bunting. The movie Cats.
Yes.
Season 18.
Gross.
Leanne, Hallmark Cards.
We're all tied up, by the way.
Hallmark Cards.
Yes.
Yes. Season 14.
That. We're tied.
Tara.
Yep.
Hershey's Chocolate.
Yes.
Season 4. Last brand product for each of you. Sarah, Broadway Revival of Godspell.
Godspell, yeah, I don't know.
All Stars, Season 1. Leanne, Tabasco.
No.
Correct.
Yay.
And I know this is an instant correct answer. Red Robin, Tara.
Oh.
Yes.
Made a lot of hay about that on this podcast. That is correct. That is halfway through our game. Let's hear the scores, please, Tara.
Oh, my God. It's so close. Sarah has 9 points. Leanne and I are just ahead and tied 11 points.
All right. This is round 7. Is this one of Troy McClure's credits you might remember him from? Sarah. The Contrabulous Abstraction of Professor Horatio Hufnagel.
Yes.
You are correct. Leanne, The Muppets Go Medieval.
I just thought medieval on your ass.
Yeah, me too.
No.
Yes.
Wilt thou take this dainty hoof in marriage?
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Cinderella 2000.
No.
Correct. Sarah D. Bunting, Oh Dad, Poor Dad, Mama's Hung You in the Closet and I'm Feeling So Sad.
Yes.
No. Leanne, They Came to Burgle Carnegie Hall.
I have some hardcore Simpson fan friends who are going to unfriend me because I don't know any of these. I'm so sad. Sorry, Daniel. No.
Yes, that was one. Tara.
Yep.
The Verdict Was Mail Fraud.
Yes.
Sarah, The Girl Hunters.
Yes?
No.
Good. Jeez.
Leanne, Makeout King of Montana.
Sure.
Yes.
Yay.
Tara.
Yeah.
Gladys the Groovy Mule.
Yes.
Sarah, Where's Papa?
Yes.
No, and I will say that is a good one. For some reason that I was like, that feels like it really should be. Could have been. Leanne, your last. The Erotic Adventures of Hercules.
Because I want it to be, I'm going to say yes.
And guess what it is?
That's Yay. One we actually see.
Tara.
Yes.
The one and only genuine original family band.
No.
You are correct. Tara sweeps that one. Yeah. Round 8. Did this musician guest star on this TV show? So I'll read you a singer and a TV show. You tell me if that happened.
Got it.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting, Cyndi Lauper on Mad About You.
Yes.
Recurring role.
Leanne, Cyndi Lauper on Will and Grace.
Yes.
No.
Oh.
Tara.
Sounds right, though.
Cyndi Lauper on Bones.
Probably, yes.
Yep. Sarah, Britney Spears on Jane the Virgin.
No.
She did. Britney Spears on How I Met Your Mother, Leanne.
Oh, dear.
Oh, we've broken Leanne. We've broken her gentle, caring spirit.
It's just these are all the shows that I don't watch. It makes it seem like I don't watch anything. No.
Incorrect. She was. Britney Spears on Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Tara.
No.
She was on that, too. She was on all three of those.
Jamie working her to death.
Sarah D. Bunting, Harry Connick Jr. on Glee.
Yes.
I would have said yes to.
Leanne, Harry Connick Jr. on Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Jesus. See, that's the stressful kind of shows I don't watch, so I don't know. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Sure was.
Okay.
Tara, Harry Connick Jr. on Ally McBeal.
No.
Correct. Last batch coming at you for this round. Sarah D. Bunting. John Bon Jovi on The West Wing.
No.
He was. Leanne, John Bon Jovi on Sex and the City.
Yes. I knew that one. Okay.
Yeah. Tara, John Bon Jovi on Ally McBeal.
I think yes.
Yes, he was on all three of those shows. Well done.
Jamie Spears working him to the bone, too.
Mm-hmm.
Round 9, did they cameo as themselves on Scooby-Doo?
Oh, boy.
Any iteration, series, or animated movie.
Okay.
Got it.
Sarah D. Bunting, John Cena. Do you know who he is?
John Cena? Yeah. Yes.
Oh, okay, that face was just like communicated total desperation.
I knew you knew who he was.
That, which is accurate, but I do know who that is. I'm going to say no.
He was.
Fuck.
Leanne, Cher. Cher.
Yeah, her and Sunny, right? I remember that episode.
1972, yeah. Secret of Shark Island. Tara, Gary Coleman.
Yes.
Back to Sarah, Bobby Flay.
I want to say no, which means it's yes, but if I say yes, it'll be no, so no.
I mean, I'm trying to follow the logic. It kind of wraps in on itself in kind of a Gordian Mobius, but that is Scooby-Doo and the Gourmet Ghost.
Wow.
Leanne, Jeff Dunham.
Is that the redneck guy?
Yeah, redneck puppeteer, redneck ventriloquist.
Yeah. I didn't even know Scooby-Doo was a contemporary of that dude.
They're still making
There's them. A bunch of different ones.
Okay, I'm going to say no.
Scooby-Doo, too many dummies.
What's the point of having a ventriloquist in a cartoon?
It's a very, very good question. Tara.
Yeah.
Dick Van Dyke.
Yes.
1972, The Haunted Carnival. Back to Sarah. Last one coming at Ichia. Mama Cass.
No.
Fuck.
1972, The Haunted Candy Factory.
That killed her.
Leanne.
Great job.
Mark Hamill.
Please don't crucify me. Is that the Star Wars guy or the ice skater? Okay. What's the ice skater's name?
Also Mark Hamill.
Okay.
Same guy.
It wasn't crazy.
Same guy. I don't know who you're talking about.
Dorothy Hamill, Dave.
Oh, okay.
Dorothy Hamill.
We're talking about Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill.
I don't even know where I came from. Yes.
Yes, if there's a cartoon, he's been on it, of course. Yes. And for Tara, Tim Gunn.
That sounds... I want to say yes, so I'm going to say no!
He is the only no answer of that round.
Good grief.
Round 10. Has this celebrity ever won an Emmy? Any category.
Okay.
Not just for
any category. Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting, Angela Lansbury.
Yes.
Nominated 17 times.
Shut the fuck up.
Leanne.
It's an outrage.
Steve Carell.
Yes.
10 nominations, no award.
Oh, damn. That's so sad.
Tara.
Yep.
Hugh Laurie.
No.
10 nominations, no award. Back to Sarah. Kristen Wiig.
Yes.
Incorrect. 8 nominations. Leanne. Loretta Devine.
She's really good. She should have, but I'm going to say no.
One win from 2 nominations.
I thought the gag was going to be all of them were no's. Okay.
Me too.
Tara.
Yeah.
Michael C. Hall.
He did.
Not.
What? This just came up on Rob Lowe's podcast this week.
I thought that was a Golden Globe, but...
Oh, maybe it was.
While you guys are checking, I just want to apologize to Dorothy Hamill for me just completely not knowing who she was besides her last name.
I think that's fine.
He has never won.
Okay. It was, must have been
you apologize to Dave from Chicago.
I'm sorry, Dave from Chicago.
Okay. Back to Sarah. Last one of round 10 for each of you. Estelle Getty.
Yes.
One win from 7 noms. Leanne, Calista Flockhart.
Yikes. Yes?
No.
Good.
Yeah.
I was going to say that's as it should be.
I agree.
Taraji P. Henson, Tara.
I think no.
You are correct. Cute. 3 noms, but no win yet.
And now we're back to the universe being upside down.
2 more rounds for you guys. This is round 11. Did this movie have an animated spin-off series on television?
Oh, boy.
Sarah, The Rocketeer.
Animated.
Animated series
spin-off. Okay, yeah, I think it did, yes.
It did not.
Wow.
Leanne, Clerks.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Tara.
Yep.
Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Yes.
Sarah, Stargate.
Yes.
Hey.
Leanne, Independence Day.
No.
You are correct. Tara, Osmosis Jones.
No.
What? Under the title Ozzy and Drix. Ozzy and Drix was the name of that show.
Well, good grief.
Sarah DeBunting, Little Shop of Horrors.
No.
Yes. Leanne, Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes.
Correct. Tara, Joe Dirt.
No.
You are correct. One more round.
Seems
let's
like it
throw
would have,
it
though.
For the scores to see where everybody is.
Okay. They're still pretty close. Sarah has 13 points. Leanne has 20 points. I have 25.
All right.
It's still anyone's game for
We're
sure.
Back it at isn't. It. This is round 12. Did this series last more than 100 episodes?
We broke Leanne again. Twice.
She remains broken. Sarah DeBunting, The Mole, including Celebrity Season.
The Mole, including Celebrity Seasons, I still think no.
You're correct. Still only around the mid-40s, even with those. Leanne, Beauty and the Geek.
I wish these were all questions about Backyardigans. No.
We just did know. A big Backyardigans episode. I'm so sorry.
Dang it.
No is the correct answer. Tara.
Yep.
Daria.
No.
Sarah DeBunting. Fear Factor.
Yes.
155 episodes.
Nice.
Gross.
I mean,
Leanne.
For you, not them.
Southland.
No.
Correct. 5 seasons, 43 episodes. No. Tara, Mad Men.
No.
But close, 92 episodes.
Oh.
Sarah DeBunting, The West Wing.
Yes.
155 episodes over 7 seasons. Leanne, Monk. Monk.
I mean, it's on every time I go to my mom's house. So I guess I have to say yes.
There is.
Correct. 125. Tara, The Nanny.
Yes.
145. Caroline in the City, sir.
The Jag of sitcoms. Carry the two. Yes.
You don't carry the two. 97.
Shut the fuck up. Yeah. It was in syndication. I would have said yes to, Sarah.
There was only 4 seasons of Carolina the City.
Crazy.
That was about 5 too many.
All right. Leanne, The Brady Bunch.
No.
There was a bunch of them. 117. Mm. And lastly, for Tara, Mike and Molly.
No.
Yes. 127 episodes. Let's get them final scores, please, Tara.
Okay. All right. Sarah finished with 16. Leanne had 23. I had 28.
All right. Good showing, everybody, but...
Well done, everyone. Yay! Except me.
Tara. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We entered the mysterious Benedict Society at Disney Plus before going around the dial with stops at In Treatment, The Good Fight, Flack, Bosh, and Dairy Girls. Craig and Courtney are kings of the canon for their successful King of the Hill submission. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this season's first game from Dave from Chicago. Next up, let's get lyrical on Extra Extra Hot Great and on EHG Prime, All American Forcening. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
my own fruit pie,
Sarah D. Bunting.
This is how Rad sleeves himself.
And the game time broken Leanne Jackson.
This flower is a Wilton.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Crate.
That was pretty wordy.